blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. Your net controls this evening are several. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely opening it up this evening. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of 80 degrees, high today of about 86, but a very beautiful day. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right, no emergency traffic. That's always a great thing. Do we have anyone celebrating a birthday this week, last week, or maybe the upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy birthday? Looks like no one's getting any older. We have no birthday stations tonight. Well, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. I do want to advise everyone, if you've been part of this session tonight, you'll be most definitely part of that recording, which actually is put on the website as a podcast. So, once again, the program tonight is Hurricane Science, Part 2, the good part. So, without any further ado, I'm going to send it over to KY6V, and I hope that everyone has a grand time this evening. And it's been my pleasure to open the program. So, KY6V from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, are you ready?
Well, I think so. Thank you, Kathy. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for stopping by. KY6V here. Tonight's program is entitled Hurricane Science Part 2, as Kathy mentioned. And I'd like to add here that towards the end of Part 1, which we ran last month, David, GW8SZL, asked a very thought-provoking question, which was, and I quote, is there anything good that comes out of a hurricane? End of quote. Well, we researched that question, and tonight we'll pass on our findings. Cyclone activity, be it called a depression, tropical storm, hurricane, typhoon, or whatever, is a devastating act of Mother Nature. Its impact can be fatal. It can demolish buildings to ground level. It can cause widespread flooding, not to mention the anxiety, the fear, and the financial input that it brings forth. So it is assumed to be correct to say that it's very hard for any of us to say or see anything that might be good with a storm of this nature. That being the case, we have done considerable research to find if there is anything good to be found. If there, what is it? What does it do? And how much healthy impact does it really have? With all of that said, allow me to bring forth the first host narrator for this evening for his thoughts, findings, and opinions. George, NO70, if you would be so kind, sir, from KY6V.
KY6V and the South Cars October 2019 TIN, NO70. Well, good evening, Gordon. Good evening to all of those assembled here tonight. Thank you very much for being with us this evening. Now, as Gordon mentioned, we had to do considerable research to find out what good comes out of a hurricane, and there is some. But that being said, we really do need to take a moment to acknowledge the researchers and everyone involved that contributed to the literature and research that we are referencing tonight. Therefore, South CARS, its members, visitors, and board of directors wish to acknowledge the many contributions of first responders, hurricane science researchers and organizations, humanitarian relief agencies, climatologists, atmospheric and space scientists, and all who contribute to our knowledge of our world, atmospheric science, and tropical cyclone research and observation. We also want to especially acknowledge the publications and organizations whose public information was available for the preparation of this Hurricane Part 2 program on what good can come out of cyclonic activity. All copyrights and trademarks remain the property of the holder, and we recognize their contribution under the Creative Commons and Academic and Public Service copyright provisions. In this nonprofit educational activity, we are grateful for their publications and research mentioned here to benefit the public knowledge and benefit of cyclonic weather systems and climatology. Acknowledgement is also made of the research and public safety efforts of all organizations that we have used, including NOAA, NASA, the National Hurricane Center, the Central Pacific Hurricane Center, Duke University's Nicholas School of the Environment and Health Sciences, the Russian Beyond website, Tomsk State University in Russia, sciencing.com, health.com website on solar flare health effects, NOAA's Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program, the National Weather Service, the National Institutes of Health, the National Academy of Sciences, the U.S. National Library of Medicine, Britannica.com, Andrew Creeps of Channel 10 News in St. Petersburg, Florida, Duncan McFadden, Nicole Rodriguez, staff writer of the Herald Tribune, Cliff Mass Weather and Climate Blog, Jonathan Bells at weather.com, and we are grateful to all other resources referenced and cited in the papers and research used to prepare this Thursday information that educational activity. Of course, there are others that are so numerous to mention, as I've mentioned those that we relied most heavily on for this, although there was a lot of good information from other sources as well. Therefore, South CARS, VOIP, especially wishes to recognize and express our gratitude for all individuals and organizations who have given their careers, missions, and even their lives to better understand cyclonic and severe weather systems, how to survive them, and the positive or beneficial impact that they may have on our environment and our world. With that being said, let me turn it over to the gentleman who asked the question, can any good come out of a hurricane? Good evening, Dave. How are you? GW8SZL NO70. Thank you, sir. Over to you.
Yes, from Golf with the 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, thank you very much, George. All's well here. Talk about an interesting article found by ScienceIn, can be found at scienceinn.com and reads, seed dispersal. Hurricanes may destroy organisms, but they also must promote their spread. Seeds borne on their ferocious winds may be sown far from their sources, facilitating the dispersal of many plant species. In South Florida, tropical hardwood hammocks, which are patches of rich jungle scattered amid expanses of sawgrass glades and pine forests, more than likely had help from hurricanes. Most of the shrubs and trees composing these shadowy wild pockets, composed of West Indian mahoganies, gumbo limbo, Stranglerfig, and others come from the Caribbean and the Central and South American tropics. While many of these seeds likely reached the toe of Florida via bird gullets or ocean currents, scientists speculate that hurricanes churning in from the Atlantic or Gulf of Mexico are also responsible. Now, habitat modifications. Hurricanes deposit vast quantities of seafloor and estuary sediments as they muscle ashore, accumulations that provide footholds for coastal vegetation communities. The storms may ravage existing mangrove swamps, but also mound up banks of sand, mud, or marl, soil consisting of limestone and clay, in which seedlings or dislodged mature trees establish new stands. In hypersaline lagoons, such as the Laguna Madre complex of southeastern Texas and adjoining Mexico, hurricanes periodically flush the salty waterways, providing notable contributions of more diluted seawater and freshwater rain and runoff. Ecological succession. A hurricane that flattens a hardwood hammock or a deciduous forest may seem an agent of destruction, but such disturbances are a natural and necessary part of ecosystem function. The toppling of defoliation of mature canopy trees allows sunlight to reach the previously dark understory, permitting shade-intolerant species to proliferate. These may experience years of dominance until shade-tolerant trees create a canopy again. Such cycling of vegetation communities is called succession, and it promotes biodiversity by giving more species a chance to occupy a given ecosystem and maintaining landscape mosaics of greater complexity. Much needed rain. The often torrential rainfall associated with hurricanes can be a double-edged sword. Flooding is commonplace in the wake of a storm, threatening human life and property. But the deluges of passing hurricanes and their weakening, but still wet remnants, can also be a boom for areas experiencing late summer droughts that sometimes coincide with tropical cyclone seasons. Storm precipitation may benefit parched crops in a severely dry stretch of the growing season, or help douse long-raging wildfires. Now we move on to the positive effects of rain from hurricanes, from an original article by Duncan McFadden, May 30th, 2016. As the hurricane season begins, there's something to keep in mind. Although these storms are known for bad things, like strong winds, heavy rain, downed trees, flooding, and power outages, there may be an upside. Researchers at Duke University say they can bring much-needed rain during droughts. Environmental engineering professor Anna Barros first got the idea to study the effect of rain from tropical storm systems in 2006, when she saw a TV news story about that year's drought in the southeastern U.S. The reporter talked to farmers who said their crops were in very bad shape. The actual headline said, "What we need is a really good hurricane," she recalls. And I thought that was really interesting, right? What is a good hurricane? What the farmers meant was the rain from the hurricane might be able to help salvage some of their crops. Maybe the farmers were onto something, Barris thought. So she and her team of researchers came up with a way to model how rainfall affects photosynthesis in plants. Plants are more efficient at turning carbon dioxide into the energy they need to grow when they have enough water. Now, they ran that model on rainfall data from the southeastern U.S. from 1980 through to 2007. Barris's team concluded in years when tropical storms or hurricanes made landfall, there was, in fact, more photosynthesis going on. They produced so much water input that actually replenishes soil moisture content in the Piedmont and recharges aquifers, and so on, she says. They play a very important role in busting droughts. Basically, and in maintaining the systems functional for ecosystems. In fact, she says the amount of carbon uptake generated by a hurricane through photosynthesis is hundreds of times that of the output of all vehicles in the US in a given year. And so, what this means is that this landscape, the southeastern US, is very well adapted to these kind of events in the warm season, of course, when the soil moisture and the aquifers need this additional output, Barris said. But too many strong storms aren't good for the plants. In years when storms are too frequent, the ground becomes saturated and there can be flooding. Barris also warns that the positive effect of hurricanes would diminish if more forests are cut down in the southeast, and the chance of flooding would increase. Now over to George, N070.
GW8SZL on the October 2019 South Forest TIN, N070. Well, let me ask or give, if anyone would like to check in or has any questions, or give people just an opportunity to say hello and put their name in for the record as well. And then I had a comment about something that you said myself, and after that I'll move on to my topic. So if I may, let me open it up for anyone who would like to check in, say hello, or would like to make a comment about that excellent material that Dave just presented. For anyone who would like to call in and check in, I believe our net control tonight is Gordon, KY6V. So at this time, I invite you, anyone who would like to check in, please call KY6V with your check-in or comment. This is NO70. Over.
Katie Pulaski, Virginia. No comment.
VK2VY.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. And George, you can pick these guys up. OVI and DY. Anybody else, please?
WE3LXD.
Now, there's a guy that's going to defend Central Florida. Hi, David. All right, let's run these three. OVI, hello, Pete. How's everything in your neck of the woods?
Katie Frost, Virginia. Yeah, good. Fine dandy. Keeping up with the weather. And got this other hurricane going by here. It's provided a lot of water, which I do appreciate. I appreciate the comment of providing water. And, I've got some comments to make, and let me put a nickel in the pot here. The thing you got to add is to the conversation is it's the economic phase of the hurricane, the rebuilding process. It's, of course, it's going to demand more labor, more parts, more material. And in essence, it keeps the economy of the area in stretched out in a year's time pretty active. And the other comment I've got to make is, other than the economic impact, but also the coating, how strong the new building is going to be. Is it going to withstand 200 miles an hour wind? That's what they have to plan for each time the hurricane goes by. The intensity becomes larger, more compact, and that needs to be planned out too, to how strong they're going to build a house. And this is my addition to the comment. Katie Frosty, Virginia, back to Neck and Soul.
Well, thank you for that, Pete. KY6V here for the TIN. All very good thoughts. You know, when you talk about economics and then on in the building codes and things like that, you and I were at a point in our lives that we assisted in improving on those building standards, if you recall, because when Hurricane Andrew and its Cat 5 gymnastics came through the Miami area back in 1992, Pete and I were down there. And as a result of that, the building standards got changed, and got changed pretty fast. More sturdy houses, different ways of construction to beef up the building, and so on and so forth. And they're still adding on to those regulations as we march on in time. So there you have it. Thanks, Pete. VK2DY. Let's see. It's 7 o'clock here. So what time is it there on the other side of the world? Robert, KY6V, over.
KY6V, this is VK2DY. Robert in Kellyville Ridge, New South Wales, metropolitan Sydney. Well, it is 10:22 p.m. Saturday morning here, Australian Eastern Daylight Time, as we are now on daylight time. So I guess for the next couple weeks at least, there'll be, 16 hours difference between you and I. And then when you guys move your clocks back, it'll be 17 hours. Beautiful spring day today. Probably mid-70s Fahrenheit. Clear blue sky, sun is shining, absolutely gorgeous. Let me reset for a second. So we get hit quite a bit, not down here, not this far south, but up in Queensland, they get hit quite a bit by cyclones, as well as much of Western Australia and parts of Northern Australia. In fact, Darwin back many, many years ago was completely destroyed by a cyclone. So we get our share down here, for sure. And I think a lot of, you know, you talk about the damage that's done, but a lot of it is just bad planning. I used to live in northern New South Wales, a city called Lismore. We get flooded every time they get some kind of heavy rain event. But that wasn't the rain event's fault. That was the fault of where they built the city. They built the city in the wrong place. they removed, I think, about 60% of Australia's tree cover in the last couple hundred years. So again, you've changed the ecosystem, and not necessarily for the better. So I think, the cyclones have been down here for thousands of years, and we just in the last 200 years have messed up the design of the cities and the ecosystem. Instead of cooperating with it, we've sort of modified it the way we want it to be, ignoring the real weather conditions. So anyway, I think that's about all I'll say for now. VK2DY, back to now.
Well, you've got me smiling. Thanks for that, Robert. You know, you start fooling around with Mother Nature, and you're going to get in trouble. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, sir. And I hope you got a great day in front of you, since it's still in the morning hours down there, down under. Let me throw it up to Dave. Dave, even though you've got a three call, I know you've been hanging your hat in Florida for a long time, so you've probably seen your share of these puddle jumpers. WA3LXD, KY6V.
This is WA3LXD. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation this evening. It's a thought-provoking subject for sure. And I have two comments. One, of course, living on a lake, Hurricane Irma filled it up. It was down so low we couldn't even lower our boat to get enough water under it, and it filled up the lake. So certainly the recharging of this lake as it goes up and goes down is assisted by these events. And then a comment pretty much along the same line that was mentioned earlier, and that is the hardening of the infrastructure that has occurred over the years as these things have happened. The electrical company out here has gone to great lengths of having alternative paths so you don't have single point failures for distribution. So the entire infrastructure has certainly been hardened over the years. So those are my two comments, and I look forward to the rest of the program. Back to Net Control.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Thanks, David. I wasn't sure where you were going with that when you were saying hardening of the infrastructure, but it makes a lot of sense. We're getting smarter in one respect and maybe a little bit not so much in another. Thank you very much, David. Okay, N-O-7-O. Front and center senor from KY6V and the TIF.
KY6V, the South Fork 10, NO70. Well, thank you, Gordon. I actually also have a comment as well, and then a two-part question for Dave on this excellent presentation. The first comment is, as Dave was talking about the hardwood hammock and the toppling defoliation and the flattening and so forth, he used a definition of the words succession and biodiversity that added an extra layer of awareness for me and what those terms mean, that the cycling of the vegetation community becomes a type of succession, and I thought that was very interesting. And then because of that cycling of vegetation, the fact that it promotes biodiversity by giving more species the chance to occupy a given ecosystem. I mean, that sure opened my eyes to an added layer of definition of ecological succession and biodiversity that I had not thought of before. So thank you, Dave, for that thought. Let me reset, please. Dave, I have a two-part question for you, because at the end of your last set of transmissions, I want to underscore what I thought I heard you say and make sure I heard it correctly. So are you ready to copy a two-part question, GW@SZL-970, over?
Yeah, I sure am, George, from Gulf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima.
Well, thank you, Dave. All right, when you were mentioning the carbon uptake generated by a hurricane through photosynthesis being hundreds of times that of the output of all vehicles in the U.S. in a given year, did I hear that correctly, in that the carbon uptake of the hurricane actually has a positive benefit of hundreds of times of the carbon cycle regeneration of all vehicles in the U.S. I mean, that's a lot of greenhouse gas of carbon uptake. And part two of the question is that the positive effects of hurricanes would diminish if we cut down more forests in the southeast, because flooding would increase, which obviously, so I presume that's referring then to something like the infrastructure that Dave was also mentioning. Could you just kind of help me make sure I've got my brain wrapped around this? Thank you, Dave. GW8SZL-NO70. Over.
That's from Gulf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima. Yes, it's the amount of carbon uptake generated by a hurricane through photosynthesis is hundreds of times that of the output of all the vehicles in the U.S. in a single year. And I was surprised and shocked when I actually heard that. And if they cut down all the trees and the forests, and then they'll get obviously more flooding, and therefore that would reduce the biodiversity as well. Obviously, plants and, wouldn't be able to take because of the flooding and all the rest of it. But, yes, very, very interesting, George. But, yes, you heard correctly. Back to you from Gulf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. Wow. That is a set of amazing facts. All right, well, we do need to move on to the topic as we look at the good effects of hurricanes on the ecology. And of course, to understand the good effects, sometimes we have to also look at the underlying science of the action or characteristics of the hurricane. So the next topic is labeled, how deep does mechanical agitation of water go underneath hurricanes? Now, we heard about it on the land side from Dave a minute ago. So mechanical agitation of water underneath cyclonic activity. We know from this and the previous TIN programs on hurricanes and cyclonic activity that deep sea water temperature greatly affects cyclonic storm formation. The way the storm forms is the indraft at the bottom of the forming hurricane and the updraft to the top of the hurricane with the fall back to ground of that air causes a cascade of air mass that can only happen with the right temperature conditions. Now, we also know if an anvil forms at the top of the updraft, the formation of a cyclone is capped and the storm cannot develop, therefore a more severe storm will not result. This means that with a capped anvil, there will be less opportunity for a severe cyclone to form or cause any cleanup of the area traveled underneath the storm. So in that case, a hurricane actually might be better than a non-hurricane, which is ironic. Let me reset. So looking at the topic of mechanical agitation and deep saltwater marine life, Dave's question about is there any good coming from a cyclonic activity hurricane can be traceable to cyclonic storm activity that also needs to be considered from a deep sea cleanup perspective. We do know that medical waste and tsunami waste has washed up onto shores far removed from the place where the waste originated. Think of the Japanese tsunami. How did the hurricane affect the water and wave motion to clean up and disperse and propagate the trash? Research into how far underwater the turbulence of cyclonic storms will reach seems to say that the wave motion under the storm to a shallow depth of up to 20 kilometers has more effect than a vortex wave theory. So let me try to restate that. So instead of thinking of a deep vortex like water going down the sink of a drain of a sink, we're learning apparently that it is the swell of the waves back and forth that has a greater effect than any kind of a vortex of the storm activity. The wave motion of the swells of the wave motion of the ocean may be of a long wave period, meaning a lower swell frequency like the frequency of a radio wave, or of a shorter wave period, meaning a higher swell frequency. We know that frequency and wavelength are inversely proportional. One may think of being in a boat riding the waves, and the long wave period would be your head going up and down fewer times per minute, and the shorter wave period would be a quick up and down of your head. Therefore, it's this back and forth motion that has more effect on the cleanup of the ecology than any type of a vortex underneath the storm. With that said, let me turn it over to Gordon KY6B, who's going to be looking a little more deeply into the benefits of tropical storms and hurricanes. KY6V, N070. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, George. KY6V here for the TIN. You know, commenting on what you have just said, I found it very interesting to determine that the way the scientists look at the underwater turbulence, if you will, is they simply say if you can measure the distance between the wave caps from one wave to another and take that distance and divide it by 50%, half of that wavelength will be the depth that is produced below the surface of the ocean with a hurricane. or a tropical cyclone. So, you know, what they're saying is that if you've got 300 feet between the waves, you got 150 feet of depth on the vortex action that's happening underneath. Okay, let me buy a nickel here and we'll move on. I wanted to quote a couple of comment on a couple of passages that I found in a website called cliffmast.blogspot.com along the various subjects that we're talking about here tonight. And they go on to say that although there's a lot of media coverage of the damage and destruction accompanying tropical storms and hurricanes, such storms can also have important benefits. And that's what we're trying to point out here this evening. For example, landfalling tropical storms can be an important source of water. We've already touched on that, covering the droughts and recharging the underground aquifers. They go on to say here that in reference to Hurricane Isaac, if you folks recall that one, there was a major drought in the midsection of the nation during this period of time. And the severe drought extended from northern Louisiana through Missouri, Iowa, into Illinois and Indiana, and west into the Great Plains. And at this time, the Mississippi River was running very low, with serious impacts on marine transportation, and the effects on agriculture were profound. And he goes on to say here, I think it's the last forecast indicated that Isaac would bring soaking rain through much of the drought region. So the benefits of tropical storms and hurricanes doesn't end with rainfall. It turns out that such storms can help maintain and build barrier beaches. We'll get into that a little deeper as we move on in the program, such as those lines of beaches along the East Coast. Now, a professor of geology from Duke noted that the barrier islands need hurricanes for their survival, especially at times of rising seas such as now. It's during hurricanes that islands get higher and wider. From a purely natural standpoint, hurricanes are a blessing for the islands, and even though they're a curse for people who live there. Let me buy a nickel for a second. So it goes on to say the hurricanes and tropical storms produce overwash of sand, and without that, islands get skinnier and skinnier and might disappear as the sea level rises. Most of the damage during hurricanes is along the coastal zone due to storm surge and associated flooding. And he's very frank here when he says too many people and structures are located along the coast and put themselves at risk. To protect themselves, all kinds of geoengineering approaches are installed, and he uses jetties as an example to put an exclamation point on that statement. Okay, George, I'm going to turn it over to you for the next one. You might want to take a pause if anybody would like to jump in and get their feet wet. KY6V to N070.
KY6V in the South Coast, October 2019 TIN, Hurricane Science Part 2. Are there positive impacts or effects of hurricanes? And, you know, the jetties and the destruction of coastal natural caves of barrier islands, I know that certainly has happened on the Outer Banks. I believe they have a new inlet on the in the southern area of their barrier islands as of a few years ago. Whether it's rebuilt, I don't know. And, of course, thinking about Hurricane Katrina and the massive problem that had and the jetties there. So that's a good point. So we'd like to open it up for anyone to say hello, check in, recheck, make comments. I'd like to welcome you into the South Florida TIN now. Please call in 070. Over.
Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo. Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo. Terry, Harrisburg, Oregon.
That recognizes Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo. Any others? Please call now. Over. Oh, nothing heard. Okay, A7, Mike Romeo. Good evening, sir, and thank you for checking in and being with us tonight. How are you tonight? And thanks for joining us on the Hurricane Part 2 TIN. AE7MR, N070, over.
Good evening. Now it's starting to chomp at the bit for the Rick Riello Swaptober Fest this weekend. Can't wait to get up there. Ain't got no money now, but as far as to bring something home, but it's a good place to go to do face-to-face with those of you that you have been talking to over the frequency. Excuse me. That's about it from here that I can think of. I had something else, but that senior moment swiped it away for a while. So 73, y'all, I'll be listening, and Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo, back to now.
Well, thank you for being with us tonight for the TIN. I appreciate that. And, yes, so you were engaging in the finest point of our ham radio hobby of procurement and having its effect on the pocketbook. Very good, sir. All right, thank you for being with us for this evening. All right, with that, we're going to continue with this evening's Thursday Information Net for October 2019. Hurricanes, can there be positive effects? A question posed by Gulf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima, who lives way up north. So it was interesting he had that question, since there's not a lot of cyclonic storm activity compared to farther south where he was. So, very good question. We're digging into the answers tonight. Let me reset. All right, so we have been talking earlier about mechanical agitation, both seabound and landbound, and now we're going to look at underwater temperature inversions as they occur under a region of cyclonic activity. Now, for a cyclonic storm to form, there must be a movement of air mass between the temperature zones below and above the seawater surface and the airborne moisture that gets heated and cooled and supercooled air. As we know, hot air rises and cool air, heavier, comes down. So there's a cycling effect as that air goes up and down. Resetting. Now, because these storms form over seawater, which is salt water, then the effects of this temperature cycling are amplified. Please remember that when you are cooking in the kitchen, salt is added to raise the boiling temperature of the liquid, meaning that it boils at a higher temperature. It takes more heat to get the boiling to occur. Therefore, the question is, why does adding salt change the boiling temperature of water, and what can we learn regarding the positive benefits of hurricanes from that? Let's think about how the molecules inside unsalted and salted ocean water behave. Plain water without salt boils at 100 degrees centigrade or 212 degrees Fahrenheit. This boiling point is partially determined by the spacing between the water molecules, because the more spacing, the less they collide and therefore less heat, and then as well as the heat absorbing capacity or entropy of the water molecules themselves. So they also can absorb heat within the molecules as well as the interaction with other molecules. Resetting. Now, as we talk about those molecules, we can say the same can be said of salt molecules dissolved in water. When the salt solution is diluted, meaning there is very little salt, i.e. not quite as much saline in the salt water, seawater, the distance between the salt and water molecules are closer to normal unsalted water, and the salt has minimal influence on the boiling temperature. However, when more salt is added, or the seawater becomes more salty or saltier, the motion of the salt molecules collides more often with the water molecules, and then heat transfer occurs between the salt and unsalted molecules. Also, higher temperatures mean that the molecules are more excited and move around faster in the solution, raising the boiling temperature because the water molecules cannot escape into the air as easily as at lower temperatures. Resetting. Now, all of this potpourri of temperature changes in molecular motion and activity affect the air mass updrafts and downdrafts that cause the cyclonic storm formation because evaporation is affected, which then makes changes in the thermal updrafts and downdrafts. The concentration of chemicals then in the salt water is also affected. As these changes occur in the thermal updrafts and downdrafts, the potential formation, severity, and travel of the cyclonic storm center and outer spirals of the storm are all affected by the changes in temperature-related updrafts and downdrafts. It's one large system of activity and energy. Resetting. Now, because the scientists know this, they have long ago deployed a system of ocean-bound buoys. You have seen these bobbing up and down in the water as you may have been riding on a ferry or going deep sea fishing or when you've been on a boat. These buoy temperature measurements can help us paint a picture of the thermodynamics of any particular storm. By analyzing these thermodynamics during storm formation as the storm travels and as the storm nears landfall, we can make some elementary predictions about ecological impact, positive or negative, on near shore and dry landfall surfaces, as Dave mentioned earlier. While this is an inexact and young science, the pace of discovery about the ecological impacts of storms has greatly accelerated with technological improvements, research innovations, satellite analysis before and after a storm, satellite-based reading of buoy data pre- and post-storm, and buoys that have gone adrift from their original mooring points and provided measurements in unscheduled monitoring locations. What the last part meant was there are some buoys that have broken loose and gone to places where they don't belong. So as a result of all of this activity of buoys and measuring buoys and retrieving data by satellite and other means, all of this innovation has helped to reduce loss of life and property, improved warning and search and rescue activities, and helped us to understand both the good and bad ecological impact of cyclonic storms in both hemispheres, north and southern, of our planet. And I would have to say then there would mean there is some good benefit to come from the storms. Of course, the bad's a lot worse than the good, but there is some good. And speaking of good benefits, and the person who raised the question about that, back to Dave, GW8SLL, NO70. Over.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, thank you, George. This is an article written by Nicole Rodriguez, who is staff writer at the Herald Tribune, entitled, "A Hurricane May Be the Only Way to Get Rid of Red Tide, Expert Says." In Sarasota, the invasion of toxic red tide on southwest Florida beaches that has slaughtered marine life and sickened humans shows no signs of retreat anytime soon, the experts say. A major weather system, such as a hurricane, could potentially rid southwest Florida of the persistent bloom, which began last October and killed an undetermined amount of marine life, while causing beachgoers to cough, sneeze, and experience other respiratory or eye irritation. Sarasota County alone estimated it has removed more than 66 tons of decomposing fish from its beaches since August the 1st, while the town of Longboat Key estimates it has cleared 5.22 tons of decaying sea life from its shoreline. And now another article by Andrew Kreitz, who's from Channel 10 News, from in St. Petersburg in Florida, entitled, "Nature's Balance, How Hurricanes Help to Keep Earth's Global Temperatures in Check." Reset. tropical cyclones, even those as complex and destructive as Hurricane Michael, are the product of nature's balance at work. No one wants them, but the reality is this, they're completely natural and essential. Now NOAA says hurricanes, including weaker systems, help to regulate global temperatures and keep Earth as hospitable as possible. They being directly in line with the sun's rays, Earth's equator is a hot place. It is where average ocean temperatures are the highest. Farther north and south, the water cools. The very basic ingredient of a tropical cyclone is high ocean temperatures, typically above 80 degrees, allowing water vapor to rise, condense, and form clouds. The storm develops from there. But it's this rising motion that holds the key to global temperature regulation. Heat literally is lifted from the ocean, transferred to the upper atmosphere, and spread toward the poles. Now this is the purpose of tropical cyclones, according to NOAA. Without them, the polar regions would become colder, and the tropics would overheat. And around to George, N070, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra, Zulu, Lima.
Thank you, Dave, and I will have a comment a moment ago as I continue myself on the topic of these temperature buoys. When you were talking about the high ocean temperature being typically above 80 degrees and the water vapor, and that being the purpose of tropical cyclones, according to NOAA, very good point. This is the October 2019 South Cars of the OIP Thirsty Information Net, where we're looking for the positive benefits in the middle of all the powerful negative benefits or negative problems caused by cyclonic storms, hurricanes, typhoons, others. Before we continue, let's offer a chance for stations to our guests tonight and members to check in, say hello, recheck, or make any comments or talk about anything that they have learned over the last few minutes here. Please call now. This is N070. Over.
Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Well, hello, George. Kyle, it's sure good to hear your voice. Be right with you. Any others who would like to check in at this time, please call now. This is N070. Nothing heard. Well, George, you're in Florida. is your hair parted by a hurricane yet, or are you still okay? KW4LCB, N070, over.
Okay, before Lima, Charlie Bravo in the group, great day. We just laid back and waiting for the big blow, George. What can I say there? You know, as you know and a few others, I was raised up in the Keys, going back five generations in the Keys. Donna took my father's house off the foundation there in Grassy Key, and been most of my younger life out on the water fishing, and you know, seen a lot of stuff there. Been in the swell, so to speak, there, and happened to look around you, and all you could see was water and the sky above, you know, as that, as you ride them waves and you go down in the swell, it seems like you're just covered up with water all around you there. But back to the subject at hand there, as far as let me pause for the calls there. Temperature monitoring. You know, there's been quite a few ships that has been sunk out there in the Atlantic, you know, with different monitoring devices. And a few extra buoys, you know, so things is being monitored right at the surface, and there's a whole lot going on below the surface that unless you was out there and saw the actual ship being sunk and all their different antennas and on it and all, and subs popping up, you know, 100 feet away from you and telling you this is a restricted area, it's time to boogie, you know, you'd never even know it's there. But I'd say that I know of from where the keys start at Key Largo and on down to Dry Tortugas there, there's been multiple monitoring devices placed on the water surface and below for monitoring different activity. I just won't say temperature, but there's a whole lot of investigations going on. But just wanted to throw that in there for the works there, and you know, speaking about Red Tide, we had an episode a couple, I believe it's been about 2 weeks ago, where a lot of dead fish is washed up, and I could speak more about the good parts as far as the wind, how it churns the water up, what it does to the fish population, their migrations, and a whole bunch of those goodies. So with that, we'll turn it back to you and let it flow and see if I can quiet my background noise down a little bit.
Well, George, it's good that you and the family have joined us on the TIN, Cater Before LCB on the South Cars October 2019 TIN N070. That was George. Now, you made me confused. George Cater Before LCB lives in Florida. I kiddingly call him George South or other South. And my name is also George. I'm located up in northern Maryland on the way to Philadelphia. And my name is George, and my call is N070. So if you're confused, maybe that helps it. And I think George South's point is excellent about the temperature monitoring and how important that is for discovery and ecological impact and what we can learn from it, which would be a positive benefit of storms. With that, then we can ask the question, what would be the effect of the cyclonic activity and temperature change on underwater and deep sea marine life imported to the food chain all the way up to the human food chain? Let me reset. All right, so looking at temperature gradients and temperature buoys, because temperature gradients, vertical and horizontal, under a cyclonic storm like a hurricane, do affect storm formation, breakup, and therefore ecological cleanup, which would be a good thing, then there is a network of sea buoys, both near shore and deep sea buoys. These buoys, as George South mentioned, are also used for weather forecasting and can help save lives and forecast cyclonic storm activity, speed, and direction of travel as a result of our learning from the earlier cyclonic storm activity, which then is a good effect. So if you're curious about these buoys, when you go to the NOAA buoy website, each buoy is shown on a map. Let me reset. Some of these buoys are located close to shore, some in the deep sea, and some in the formation basins for cyclones, hurricanes, and typhoons, including outside Africa. When you hover on the map over one of the buoys, it will give you the position, winds, barometric pressure, air temperature, and water temperature at the buoy. There will be links for viewing details and viewing history. So the functionality of these buoys has expanded greatly since even the 70s and 80s and 90s. When you point and click on the details in the display where you hover over the buoy, it will show more information including search and rescue or SAR data, meteorological observations from nearby stations and ships, and also a combined plot. You will also have access to search historical meteorological data for observations, and you can set threshold conditions to help you understand the observations of the buoys that you're looking at. By examining the buoy data, we can help understand the formation, threat, wave propagation, potential landfall impact, and possibly deep sea ecological impact, including on the food chain, and naturally occurring storm cleanup from the vortex and wave activity of the cyclones, typhoons, and hurricanes as they form and travel. So quite an extensive monitoring network, which will fall under the positive benefit over time and with added experience of cyclonic storm formation and travel. With that, it is time to hear more about the impact of good impact of storms and cyclonic activity from Gordon, KY6V. Over to you, NO70.
Well, thank you, kind sir. NO70 from KY6V. I want to wave at George up there. Nice to have you aboard with us, Mr. T. That's George South out of Orange City, Central Florida. I want to cover a couple of comments put out by a Jonathan Bells representing weather.com. And it's relative to replenish plant life and the hurricane effects. And he says here that what isn't blown around on the ground during a hurricane can sometimes be carried hundreds of miles downstream. I don't know necessarily that it has to be downstream, but that's what he's saying. As hurricanes make landfall, the wind blows spurs and seeds further inland from where they would normally fall. And this effect can be seen a 1,000-mile islands as storms move from one shoreline to another. These seeds can replenish the lost growth after fires and urbanization. Tropical systems often thin out tree foliage, which can be beneficial in firefighting efforts. The act of pruning trees as to mitigate damage can also help. And he goes on to say that one study said that the loss of foliage in hurricanes and other natural disasters aids long-distance seed dispersal. Fresh nutrients and sediment brought in by hurricanes can spawn growth spurs in new plant life, which can later lead to an uptick in animal life. That's something to think about. I'm going to throw it over to Mr. Wales, GW8SZL from KY6V.
Yeah, from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Yeah, thank you very much, Gordon. Now, we know that temperature affects hurricane formation and collapse of the cyclonic storm. We also know that anything that affects the temperature gradients of the hurricane affects how strong or weak the cyclone will be. Now, therefore, anything that makes the water molecules more excited and move faster will affect any weather system. Temperature is defined as being higher when water molecules move a lot faster. Now, as temperature affects the severity of a hurricane, we learn more about the effects of hurricanes of similar strength, including any small beneficial effects. Because water temperature is a measure of the energy in the molecules of moisture in a hurricane, anything that excites the water molecules will affect any beneficial effects in the wake of a hurricane. Now, a factor in the formation of the ozone that helps clean the air is electrostatic discharge, lightning, and ionospheric radiation. Now, ionospheric radiation can occur as a result of solar winds and radiation striking the Earth's seas and land surfaces after it passes through the Earth's ionosphere and atmosphere instead of being repelled by the Earth's magnetic field. An interesting question is, if this solar radiation that affects the hurricane's profile including travel speed, wind speed, and direction, may also create a beneficial impact by the cyclone. Now, a second interesting question is, if the study of cyclones after they have passed provides some benefit to the human race, such as knowing how to reduce the possibility of medical strokes in individuals at risk, including the infirm and elderly. This question is especially important during this current period of very low solar activity, where many people did not experience nor remember significant storms that occurred before they were born. Now, by knowing more about the ecological cleansing effect of the air by solar radiation in the area of cyclonic activity, we may learn more about how to obtain benefit from a hurricane's passing. Now, according to one source, all biological systems on Earth are exposed to an external and internal environment of fluctuating invisible magnetic fields, known as geostorms, of a wide range of frequencies. So now we're going to pass it back over to George, NO70.
Well, thank you, Dave. GW8SZL and the sidecars TIN, NO70. And, of course, all of those listening tonight, participating guests and visitors, know that we're obviously, as radio operators, going to be interested in the beneficial effect of storms from that perspective. So we know that geomagnetic storms do have an effect on cyclonic activity, and let's look at the interrelationship as well with the geomagnetic storms and radio propagation and the context of cyclonic activity. A web article from the Scientific American defines a geomagnetic storm as being caused by major solar events such as flares, coronal mass ejections, and sunspots that result in technological impacts on our modern electronic society. I'll be happy to address definitions for those later, or information is available online regarding those words. Now, two of these geomagnetic storms have been observed with significant impact on our ecology. One of them are the Carrington events in September of 1859 that is considered to be the most powerful geomagnetic storm on record, and another storm, a later one in May 1921, known as the New York Railroad event, that may have been just as powerful or more so, when it caused three major fires in the U.S., Sweden, and Canada. It is considered possible that this latter geomagnetic storm may have contributed to three major fires worldwide on the same day, one sparked by strong currents in telephone wires at a railroad station in Brewster, New York, burned the station to the ground. The second was a fire that destroyed a telephone exchange in Karlstad, Sweden, and the third occurred in Ontario. Now, with these heavy geomagnetic storms, which we have not seen recently in our life experience, so we may be a little bit out of touch with the power that these geomagnetic storms can exert on our ecology, including cyclonic storm formation, with all of this solar energy hitting a hurricane, which itself is a very energetic storm, dependent for its cyclonic life on a system of highly energetic set of temperature and air molecular movement, can we recognize any advantages of a hurricane to the Earth? A hurricane benefit may possibly result from a study of the effects of this solar activity on a cyclonic weather area. Interesting thought. Let's go back to Gordon, KY6V, and I'll 7-0 over.
Thank you, George. KY6V here. Yeah, I'd like to take this a little further. For a second question about the prevention of health risks as a benefit of hurricanes and how our knowledge of hurricanes and the effects of solar storms on cyclones, let's consider the following research opportunities that would be benefit of hurricanes already being performed in Russia. Research by Siberian scientists in Russia asks the question, if the Earth's magnetic field can influence a person's physical health and psychological welfare. We already know that a cyclonic storm event causes increased damage or stroke, physical health, psychological welfare, because of the stress of the storm and its cleanup on individuals. Can a positive effect of cyclone be the new research into how to minimize these effects? Now, the scientists at the State University, TSU, studied 60 people of various ages and confirmed with more than 350 observations that magnetic storm impact hearing and vision slowing reaction time. Now, how about that? Let me buy a nickel here for a second. If we study the effects of the solar activity on cyclonic activity, we may have a benefit resulting from that activity. Environmental magnetic fields help birds to navigate. I think we all know that. Human brain changes are considerably affected when an area within disturbed magnetic field. However, people do not experience any unusual sensations and generally do not notice anything happening. So the impact of geomagnetic abnormalities varies from for people of different ages. The electric activity of the brain changes after 4 or 5 minutes among the young people. I didn't know this. While the elderly, it's about 1 minute. That's quite a ratio change, I would think. In this case, the reactions are similar to those during a magnetic storm. So, George, would you like to elucidate further KY6V back to NO70?
KY6V in the South Cars TIN NO70. Well, yes, I would like to elucidate by substantiating it with some numbers and facts and research as we look at whether cyclonic activity can have a positive or beneficial effect. And we are learning that we can have a lot of learning result as a beneficial impact of these storms. So let's take a closer look at that in the context of these geomagnetic storms. A link seems to exist between geothermal storms and stroke risk among people in New Zealand, Australia, the United Kingdom, France, and Sweden. The study that was conducted compared 11,453 hospital reports with daily geomagnetic activity over a 23-year period. And that's how many solar cycles is that? Maybe Courtney can tell us in a minute. And the study found that geomagnetic storms were associated with a 19% increased risk of stroke overall and a 27% increased risk of stroke among adults under 65. Hurricanes also presented an increased risk of stroke and adverse physical and mental health problems in people. So can we help then prevent illness by researching a combination of cyclonic activity, solar storm events, and physical and mental illnesses? If we can do that with additional research, we would have another positive beneficial effect of cyclonic storm activity. Now, the authors of the study suggest that geomagnetic storm warnings should be announced along with weather reports and that doctors and patients should pay closer attention to controlling conventional risk factors for stroke during the days leading up to these geomagnetic solar events. And as they're passing, and of course, if there's cyclonic activity, they would be involved in the mix. These actions, they say, may reduce stroke incidence on a global level and therefore promote quality of life and the happiness of our society. So if we understand more about the interaction between cyclonic storms like hurricanes, cyclones, typhoons, and so forth, and solar activity and geomagnetic storms, we may have another beneficial effect of a cyclonic storm. Only the future will tell if we can apply a synthesis of apparently unrelated natural phenomena and find them to actually be related and help us to learn about helping people and our helping people to learn about our relationship of these storms and our ecology. Many discoveries have been made because of such creative thinking and research, such as electricity shocks to the heart of a living human being that at the time of it sounded way far out, but we know it now as a pacemaker. And how many people are alive now because of a pacemaker? Can a hurricane or cyclonic activity somehow, after it does the damage, be a friend to our medical and scientific research as another example of the beneficial effect of cyclonic storm activity? So, with that thought about geomagnetic storms and monitoring, which then goes back to the buoys as well, and all of the other thoughts, let me turn it back to Gordon, and we'll look for any check-ins or rechecks and go from there. I think we're pretty much covered what we have so far. KY6B on the South Coast TIN, NL70, over.
Well, thank you, George. KY6V here. You know, I was amazed at your quick draw recovery action. I can now tell you that, you know, I know that you hail from Arizona at one point in your life, so you must have a quick draw on the gun. You came up to a point where you went in a timeout, and you were there about 3 nanoseconds before you recovered from it. Boy, that was great. Okay, guys and gals, so we're about to wind this thing up. We are currently an hour and 21 minutes into the program, 21 minutes into the second a session. I'd like to find out if there's any other comments out there from anybody, questions or comments. We will attempt our best to have the podcast edited and posted on the website sometime in the morning, as the part two version, and we'll sort of take things from there. So, let me open it up. Do we have anything for the good of the order before we close? KY6V, call now, please.
NO70.
Lima?
Okay, you guys double, but I got you both. I have NO70 and SZL. George, go ahead.
Well, I think you're going to David, everyone on the South Coast net here. You know, this has been an eye-opening experience with Dave's question of what are the beneficial effects of cyclonic activity, I know, which has given me a renewed and added appreciation for the question of what additional learning in other parts of our ecology, of climatological science, ecological science, can we learn from and consider to be a positive benefit of the experience. You know, we all grow as we learn and as we have experiences. And my goodness, Dave's question tonight sure brings that point of learning and growing home in a way I had never anticipated until hearing what was said tonight on the TIN. That's my comment. KY6Z on the South Coast TIN, NL70, over.
Well, I'll tell you what, George, I second that. KY6V here. 150%. And I'm going to turn it over to the guy that got this all started here tonight. And David, for your next question, whenever that may be, make it a little more easy to research, please. GW8SZL from KY6V.
Yeah. You go on from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. It's been a really interesting subject, and you know, the information that has been researched has been fantastic. But I'd like to make a little comment on what you mentioned, Gordon, about environmental magnetic fields and the influence on the human brain and disturbed magnetic fields. Well, you're probably not aware, but you will be now. Admiral Sue suffers from a condition, a medical condition called SVT, Sierra Victor Tango, which basically is supraventricular tachycardia. Now, I didn't believe this, right, but I actually did my own research. She can detect when there's a lightning storm within 80 miles radius. Now, she said, oh, there's a thunderstorm with lightning somewhere close. So I thought, nah, you know. No chance. How would you know that? So anyway, call up the lightning radar, and yes, there's one around, you know, within 80 miles. Only a single one sometimes, so it doesn't have to be that intense. What SVT is, her heart normally goes very, very fast, usually above 200 beats per minute. And to keep that monitored in case she needs to go to hospital, I have an SpO2 meter. And for those that are not aware, that is what doctors pop on your finger to check your blood oxygen level and your heart rate in beats per minute. I've also got one that I can plug into the computer so I can actually monitor it in real time on a graph. But just to, as I said, I couldn't resist passing that comment. But she is basically a human lightning detector because her heart starts racing and it goes up significantly. And she's good to 80 miles radius. Back to you, Gordon. I hope that's not going to be a topic of another TIN net. Back to you, Gordon, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima.
Isn't that interesting? Thank you for sharing that, Dave. And Admiral Sue as well. Well, I'll bet you that her footprint is better than 80 miles. So you're going to have to sharpen your pencil on that one. You know, that's interesting, Dave. I'll make an aside comment here. I have for years been known to say to a lot of people that I can sense a hurricane coming. And I have been able to do it. And I smell it. Believe it or not, I can smell the increase in what the hurricane is stirring up, be it salt or whatever. I can say something's coming. Now, I can't predict it like Noah can, but I can tell you when something's out there, and quite a couple hundred miles, not 80 miles. Dave, what do you think that's all about? Over.
Yeah, from GWS. Oh, I don't really know. But I did some work in Belize for a few months. And, you know, we had a guide, obviously, to take us where we needed to be, through the undergrowth, and otherwise you'd everybody just get lost. And not a cloud in the sky. Absolutely beautiful. Really, really hot. And he said, oh, we better move back now because it's going to pour down, kind of thing. Torrential rain. Well, you look at the sky, like, where is it? He said, it'll be about 10 minutes. We've got enough time to get back. And yep, he was spot on, virtually to the minute. And I have no idea how he knew. And I did it on more than one occasion as well. And it was absolutely fantastic. It's like, you know, where did he have a Doppler shift radar with him in his pocket? But no. So that's a bit of an unknown. But that's my experience and only experience with somebody, you know, knowing how to do that and when it's going to happen. But, yeah, that's amazing. Back to you, Gordon, from GW8SNO.
Comment NL7O.
Yeah, I'll be right with you, George. Well, you know, that's an interesting comment. A human barometer. Go ahead, George. NO70KY6V.
Well, you know, I'm struck by the discussion of the physical awareness and manifestations of oncoming storm. We heard earlier on the net about the effect on people, their psychology as well as their physical well-being as the storm approached. And it's interesting, the modern healthcare practices that have become part and parcel of the hurricane and cyclonic storm recovery. For example, the Medical Reserve Corps now has a part of its training arsenal courses in the reducing the psychological and mental impact on people of these severe storms. On the physical side, which you guys were just talking about, let me reset. In doing some work for Medical Reserve Corps, some incidental research came up where about 15 to 18% of the population has a tendon disorder in their hands, usually in the thumbs, that causes that thumb to, with the tendon inside, to click as the thumb is extended or retracted, and that's because of that tendon being in a position to cause that click to occur, and the thumb can actually get stuck in one of the either open or closed position. Now what's interesting is that that tends to occur more often in the morning because of the weather characteristics of morning air. If we're talking about characteristics of air, we're talking about characteristics of air also during cyclonic activity. So the fact that people's bones click, or they can say that they can feel a storm coming, or that someone's tendons can say that there's a storm coming, or the fact that Gordon, living in Florida, and others can sniff out a hurricane, I believe it. KY6V, NO70, over.
You know, I have that problem every now and then, George. Doesn't happen too often. Where my, it's not necessarily my thumb, but I'll have a finger or two or something on my hand that seems to get stiff and locked in a position for a moment until I beat the heck out of it and get it loosened up. Okay, guys and gals, I'm going to get the fat lady to sing. Anybody else here before we close this evening? KY6V for the TIN. Over.
Alpha 7, Mike Romeo, comment.
Mr. Oregon, anytime. Go right ahead. KE7MR, please.
Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo, returning. I'm a sheep herder slash rancher farmer's son. And my grandfather, he did all of the weather for the canyon, and he would get up in the morning around between 5 and 6:30 in the morning and clear his lungs before he stepped out, and he would take a deep breath in the morning around between those 2 hours, and he would know whether he needed to get on the fields and get the right pay out of the fields or whatnot,
I use it even myself today if I'm wanting to be curious and see where the weatherman is or not. Just thought I'd throw that out. Back to Net from Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo.
Well, isn't that interesting? Thank you for sharing that. KY6V here. I'm still trying to figure out how these guys find water with the divining rod. But that's going beyond the subject we want to discuss here tonight. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all those ships out at sea, we're going to say bye-bye for now. It's been the TIN here for October. We've been talking about Hurricane Science Part 2, particularly trying to concentrate on finding and discussing the good points. Not necessarily outweigh the bad points, because there's so many of them in a hurricane or a cyclone action, but to point out that there are some there and some that are very meaningful. Again, we'll try to get that podcast edited into proper form and published on our website sometime tomorrow morning. So with that, this has been SCARS, VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on our SCARSVOIP.com website. We want to thank everybody for coming by. We're going to return the net back to normal use and fun and folly, and we'll see you all down the coax. KY6V is now clear, and bye-bye to all.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing.